From Katanning to Jeffersonville, State College to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, allowing membership organizations to form their own health insurance groups would make healthcare more affordable and more available. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business and Jesri Friend of the Manufacturers and Business Association for a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And voters and the media pay little attention to them, but the courts are one-third of our government, and this year's judicial elections are as important as gubernatorial and legislative elections. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Efforts at reforming portions of Pennsylvania's election laws have been approved by the General Assembly and await Governor Tom Wolf's signature, which is expected to happen. Among the changes are cutting the deadline for registering to vote from 30 to 15 days prior to an election, allowing for the casting of absentee ballots for any reason, and eliminating the straight party voting option. Also included is significant funding for counties to assist in the purchase of new voting machines mandated last year by the governor. A reminder that this Tuesday, November 5th, is Election Day. The only statewide offices on the ballot are for two seats on the Pennsylvania Superior Court, but voters will find a lengthy ballot which will include a wide range of county, municipal, and school district offices. These are the people who have the biggest impact on your day-to-day lives, so we encourage everyone to get out and vote. More evidence that a voucher program is needed to allow students in struggling school districts to attend private, charter, or cyber schools comes from the city of Pittsburgh, where a newly released PSSA assessment test statistic shows that half of third grade students in the city are not proficient enough to move into the fourth grade. That statistic is widely viewed as an indicator of future academic success. Despite the failure of public schools in Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and other cities across the Commonwealth, Governor Tom Wolf continues to throw more obstacles in the path of charter schools. Wolf's campaigns for governor, by the way, received millions in contributions from public school teacher unions. And a Common Pleas court judge in Allegheny County upheld the Second Amendment rights of gun owners this past week by striking down controversial gun ordinances enacted by the Pittsburgh City Council in the wake of the tragic shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue last year. Three firearms organizations had sought a court order prohibiting the ordinances from going into effect. The court agreed. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Small businesses in particular find it difficult and expensive to provide health insurance for their employees due to the small size of their group. But what if such businesses were able to band together to form association health plans? Here to explore the idea, our Capital Watch crew, David Taylor and Rebecca Euler, are joined by Jesri Friend of the Manufacturers and Business Association. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania. Rebecca, thanks for being on the program.
Wonderful to be here again. Thank you, David.
Well, you know, there are so many issues that affect, business in Pennsylvania and the way that we operate, and certainly healthcare is one of those issues because, you know, most Pennsylvanians receive their healthcare benefits through their employer, and that, you know, as the competition is rising for talent, that businesses need to be able to offer those benefits to attract qualified employees.
Absolutely. And NFIB does a survey regularly of small business problems and healthcare costs have been at the top of that survey for, gosh, over three decades now, I think. They're a real problem for small businesses. And like you said, they are important for attracting employees to businesses, which is a critical problem right now. And for small businesses to be able to compete with larger businesses, they really do need to be able to offer, they appreciate the ability to offer, you know, healthcare that's affordable.
And of course, affordability is the key problem, and this is something that, that Pennsylvania needs to address. And actually, this is why I want to welcome our special guest to the program, Jezri Friend, who's the Senior Government Affairs Representative from the Manufacturer and Business Association. Jezri, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, Dave and Rebecca, and thank you so much for having us. We're delighted to be a part today.
Well, absolutely, and you guys have been taking point on this healthcare issue for small business, and that the horse that you're riding is this thing called association health plans. Can you explain to the listeners what how that concept works?
Association health plans, what they do in the very most basic definition is they allow small businesses to aggregate and combine together and purchase health insurance the same way large employers do right now. With that advantage, they're able to have competitive pricing and have a larger negotiating power that right now they're just unable to participate in.
And so, Jezri, you know, the Manufacturer and Business Association, you know, our great friends, you folks, you know, represent employers. You know, you're based in Erie, but you have members all across, you know, northwestern, northeastern, western Pennsylvania. What are you hearing from your members? Are you hearing the same kind of cry that Rebecca hears at NFIB?
We sure are, David. And on that, we have our membership footprint does go across 54 counties across the state. We do have offices just north of Pittsburgh and Cranberry, as well as an insurance office in the Harrisburg area. And we put out a similar survey internally to our membership about how health insurance is affecting them. I do an annual government affairs survey, and we just got the results back. And it's so interesting to note the number one issue that's facing my membership as a whole, which is largely manufacturers, smaller ones, but also those general businesses, the number one issue that came back was the rising cost of health insurance for employers. And what's interesting to note is if some of those costs were reduced or eliminated or the burden was eased on them, how would they spend those savings?
Uh-huh.
I think this is so interesting. The number one answer was investing back into their employees. Company owners, they want to do the right thing because they know they have to make their workplace competitive. Remain viable. This is the story of the big, bad, greedy company out to get their people. It just simply isn't true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have quantified data that proves otherwise.
Yeah. And even if that ever was true, that's not the world we live in now, because there are more jobs available than there are people who are looking for work. At any point, there are about 6,000 manufacturing jobs in Pennsylvania that are open, where employers are looking for new talent. And, you know, in this new world, like I was saying to Rebecca earlier, employers really have to focus on their talent, take care of people, because if you don't, they're gonna leave. So this concept of association health plans, you know, for businesses to be able to band together, and in that way to increase the pool of lives covered, to, you know, to get better rates on insurance policies, it sounds like a good idea. This is an idea that has this been tried anywhere?
Yeah, in fact, our organization, as well as many others in Pennsylvania, operate. We had them since the 1960s. Around 2013, due to a new federal law, and really was a provision inside the Affordable Care Act, that no longer allowed small businesses to be competitive the way large businesses are. Federally, some new rule change came down the line to allow this to happen again. There's some stuff tied up in the courts right now, but there's a lane through states, and right now there are 30 states, 30, across this country that are allowing association health plans to operate right now. There are lives being covered currently. And so we would just like Pennsylvania to have the same competitive advantage that other states have.
Okay, Jezri, this is the key question. Then why can't we do this in Pennsylvania?
I don't understand why the administration doesn't want to support small businesses and alleviate this financial burden.
Wait, Jezri, Jezri, you're telling me that the Wolf administration will not allow association health plans in Pennsylvania?
Well, that's a mixed answer. I've had personal conversations with the administration. They claim they seem to be slightly open to some things, and every time there has been an issue brought up, we've successfully and legally addressed these things. And the consequence, well, it's not your plans we have an issue, it's these imaginary, worst-case scenario things that has not happened in over 30 years, because since the late 1980s, there's been regulatory framework that safeguarded any of the potential issues that these boogeyman stories.
So how is that different from other states' experiences? Have other states been successful with this? Have their governors been more supportive? What have other states done that are different than what Pennsylvania's doing now? Or not doing, I should
sure.
say.
Sure. It could be as easy, and this has been true of 11 states, who have simply put out an FAQ or an advisory letter from their insurance bureau or department or commission, whatever, you know, it's different to each state, just saying we will allow it and this is how they will be regulated. That's as easy as it needs to be. 11 states now on the books that have legislation that will allow this, and I'm like, that's 30 states. A lot of these states are purple states and there's some blue states that are supportive of this. North Carolina is one of them. They have a purple legislature and they have a Democrat governor who's allowing this. Washington State's another one, very blue state, and yet they're allowing these to happen because they see the merit that this helps small business, and it really just allows them to purchase health insurance the same way. And the sticking number here is 50. If you have 51 employees to 1,000, you purchase health insurance for your employees on the large group market. If you have 50 or less, it's on the small group. For some reason, no one has an issue the way large group currently does. But if you have two of them that combine and they have 52 members together, for some reason that's an issue and we don't want to allow it. If I can be honest, it seems to be purely political.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, with Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania and our special guest, Jezri Friend from the Manufacturer and Business Association. So Jezri, getting back to that point, why should this be political?
I would say some of those who have opposed it, the talking points have been that it's somehow a slight against the ACA. However, that's proven not to be true. The other opposition I've heard as well, it could potentially destabilize the individual market. And now, as of January of 2019, so sometime this past, federally, the Congressional Budget Office, in which every congressman or woman, Democrat, Republican, must use when they make their laws for some data, has now quantified their efforts. And they said, when association health plans are established nationwide, they forecast 400,000 new lives will be insured. That's not just 400,000 people who are on or covered by an association health plan. These are 400,000 individuals who previously were not covered by health insurance by their employer.
Well, and you'd think that would be the goal, to, you know, to make sure that people are able to afford coverage so they have it.
Absolutely.
So they can be protected by it.
Issue. Our shared goal is more people being covered by health insurance.
And it's like you said, and allowing small businesses specifically to offer that benefit to their employees, which many of them can't do now. So that's really important.
One of the key danger signs for Pennsylvania is that our small business startup rate is very anemic. It's very low.
48th.
And that's a danger sign because, you know, if we had a healthier environment, more people would be willing to, you know, to take that leap, to risk, you know, their assets, their income in starting an enterprise. We need that startup rate to be much higher because, of course, not all new businesses, not all small businesses, you know, make it. We need people to be continually willing to try, and the fact that people aren't willing to try, I think, is a flashing red light for our economy.
Yeah, I think we need to give small businesses the tools that they need to make that jump, and then to succeed once they've made that jump. And this seems like an important tool that could be very helpful to a lot of small businesses and help, you know, in the longer run here, as we talk about more and more helpful tools, improve that rate of startup, which I think 48th in the country is pretty embarrassing.
Yeah, not good enough. So, Jezri, where do things stand? How do we move forward from here?
we have some amazing friends in the General Assembly, and we now are introducing legislation that will provide this very benefit to small businesses. In the Senate, our champion really has been Senator Michelle Brooks out of the Mercer County area. She has a great understanding of the issues on this, big supporter of small businesses, and she really gets it. She's been championing this. They just put a co-sponsorship memorandum out. It will be introduced soon. And then additionally, it's amazing all the support we have for this. And I would like to note that the support is bipartisan. This is a bipartisan effort. I have R's and D's on both sides of saying, Jesri, this helps businesses. We're in. And in the House side, we have a freshman lawmaker, Representative Valerie Gatos, out of the Moon Township. That's kind of southwest Pittsburgh area.
Allegheny County.
Previous business owner herself. And she is an absolute rock star when it comes to things like this. And she is our prime sponsor in the House and just sent out a co-sponsorship memo just last week.
So would the bill just essentially require the Department of Insurance, the insurance commissioner, to provide for AHPs in Pennsylvania?
Yes, it would have to allow them. And let me be clear, these association health plans that we're looking to do are fully insured through a third-party carrier. These are not self-insured parties through a series of employers. These are fully insured, fully regulated, still regulated by the Pennsylvania Insurance Department, mind you. They have that authority. When you're on an association health plan as part of buying it just through the small group market, they're seeing savings right now of upwards of 30%.
That could be what makes it possible. That could be the pivot point on whether or not that particular small business is able to offer that critical benefit to their employees.
And you're exactly right. And because of every year this cost has been increasing without a slowdown, I've had company owners tell me, Jesri, if it goes up, someone who was on my board told me this, if it goes up 1 more percent, I may have to no longer offer this as a benefit to my employees. Mm.
We've heard that from so many of our members, the same thing. It's a shame.
So unfortunate.
And that would be the beginning of the end because, that starts the downward spiral where if you can't offer that critical benefit to your employees, they're going to have no choice, depending on their family situation, but to look for another job. The small business starts losing talent. You lose capacity. And
it's a downward spiral.
We've got legislative champions. We have, ongoing discussions with the executive branch. Do you think this is an issue that that can be dealt with perhaps during the upcoming budget season?
100%, I absolutely do. In fact, we are on some earlier conversations that, maybe if we had a little bit more things established ahead of the game, it could have been taken care of this past year.
Uh-huh.
I 100% believe this will get passed through the legislature this season and hopefully be wrapped up by the budget. That would be amazing.
Well, every once in a while we do manage to make some kind of incremental progress in Harrisburg. And so if we could enact this reform and have, as you said, have the insurance commissioner write a permission slip, with the guidelines, with the frequently asked questions, then that would be a way for Pennsylvania employers to be able to participate in a way that, as you said, that employers in 30 other states are already able to benefit.
And that number is growing. There's actually some more stuff. I just heard Wisconsin and a couple other ones who weren't on that list are working. Michigan's another one, are looking to adopt some form to provide this financial relief. So this is not just a Republican issue or a Democrat issue. This is a small business issue, and other states realize that.
And, and again, I will make the pitch. These are baseline facts that people need to keep in mind that, small business is, in fact, the largest employer in the Commonwealth, and that when it comes to new jobs being created, the small business sector leads the way.
Two out of every three new jobs are created by small businesses in Pennsylvania. So it is an important sector to support. And like I said, increase the tools that are available to small businesses to succeed.
And Jesri, does this inflict any additional cost on the taxpayer?
Not at all. Not at all. It doesn't inflict any additional costs. It gets more people insured that were previously insured. And then as a value benefit, is if they were not previously covered, they don't have to purchase it on the individual market. They're offered it through their employer. what an amazing opportunity. Yeah. And then the employee now has more money in their paycheck because they're not out this money that they can put back into whatever it is that they require to purchase a new car, education for their children, what have you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, all right. Well, we're going to focus on this. We're going to soldier on. Jezri, I want to ask you, again, just give a thumbnail sketch. Talk about MBA. Talk about the work that you folks do.
Sure, I'd love to. We, as I said before, we're in 54 counties throughout Pennsylvania. We do dip a little bit in Ohio and in New York, but completely by organic growth of kind of spillover. We are an employers association who provide, we're a service provided organization. So I'm a very small part with my, operate in the government affairs department. We do advocacy for things just like this that support our membership. In addition, we do a lot of training. We also have an HR component. It's a good example of, let's say you're a small manufacturer and you have only 10 employees. It's not as much fiscal sense for someone like that to have a full-time HR personnel. But if they could subcontract some of those HR needs to an organization like ours, maybe they're costing only $5,000 for the whole year. It would make more sense to do that than be able to purchase or rather pay for an employee at a full rate. So we provide value-added benefits to our members. We have an energy program. We also do insurance, as you can tell, group insurance
yes.
and things like that. But we're limited right now because there is no association health plan offering.
Well, you guys, again, you're a valued ally, and it's always a joy to get to work with you, Jezri, and your team. I'll tell you what, we're winding up here. Where can the listeners go to learn more about you and MBA and the things that you're doing?
If you go check out our website, that's mbausa.org, mbausa.org. There is all kinds of updates there on our HR services, on our energy program, on our logistic offerings. I will put a plug in for my government affairs page. You click on that.
Well, Jezri, that's wonderful. MBAUSA.org. Well done. And Rebecca, where can people go to find you and NFIB Pennsylvania and learn more about what you folks are doing?
They can find us at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Rebecca and me, thanks again to Jezri Friend for being on the show with us. And thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Here is a pop quiz. What two statewide offices are on the ballot in Tuesday's general election? If you answered two seats on the Pennsylvania Superior Court, you would be right. And I'd bet that 90% of voters across Penn's Woods would not have been able to get the correct answer. The judiciary is vested with one-third of governmental power. Judges and justices make decisions that affect our lives every day, and they do so with relatively little scrutiny and certainly with far less coverage than the legislature and the governor receive. Pennsylvania's court system begins at the magisterial district judge level, moves upward to county-level courts of common pleas, and then to three statewide appellate courts. Most voters are familiar with the state Supreme Court, but we also elect judges to the Commonwealth and Superior Courts. Since very few cases actually are accepted for review by the Supreme Court, the Commonwealth and Superior Courts are often the courts of last resort. The power or abuse of power by the courts was on full display last year when the Pennsylvania Supreme Court trampled the constitutional right of the legislature to draw congressional district lines and outsourced the gerrymandering of a new map to a California college professor and then by judicial fiat ordered that new map into effect. Since most of the offending justices were elected to 10-year terms in 2015, voters will not get a chance to hold them accountable at the ballot box until 2025, and then they stand for a retention election rather than for re-election. Clearly, the judiciary is far more insulated and unaccountable than the other two branches of government, which makes the election of judges and justices all the more important. Voters, however, frequently go to the polls unaware of who their candidates are, their qualifications, or lack thereof, what their judicial philosophy might be, what the appellate courts actually do, and frankly, even if the offices are on the ballot. Statewide judicial offices are low-profile races on which comparatively little money is spent campaigning, with candidates struggling for media and voter attention. Given the power vested in the judiciary, some structural changes are in order. There are those, mostly government insiders, who support so-called merit selection. The process would end the election of judges and justices and instead have them appointed by the governor and confirmed by the state legislature. That, however, would deprive voters of any direct say in fully one-third of their state government. Another proposal would be to elect appellate court judges and justices by region. Regions would be redrawn every 10 years following the census, just like is done for congressional and legislative districts. This would make it easier for judicial candidates to become better known to voters. It would also bring some balance to the appellate courts, which are now heavily dominated by judges and justices from Philadelphia and Allegheny counties. A snapshot of public opinion on this issue was taken during the 2019 Fall Keystone Business Climate Survey conducted by the Lincoln Institute. The survey of business owners and chief executive officers found 47% support the election of judges and justices by region, 28% support continuing statewide elections, 15% favor appointment by merit selection. The survey also asked whether judges and justices should continue to be elected for 10-year terms. 29% think 10 years is an appropriate term length for the statewide judiciary. 40% favor giving judges or justices 6-year terms. 26% think 4-year terms are sufficient. As mentioned earlier, appellate court judges and justices stand for a yes-no retention vote rather than for re-election, which would give other candidates the opportunity to seek those offices. The 2019 Keystone Business Climate Survey found 71% believe that judges and justices should stand for re-election, while 24% say we should continue to hold retention elections. Any change to the manner in which appellate court judges and justices are elected would require a constitutional amendment. In Pennsylvania, that is a lengthy and difficult process, requiring passage by 2 consecutive sessions of the legislature and then approval by voters in a referendum. No consensus for change has yet emerged, but the continued judicial activism of the current Supreme Court, which periodically steals or tramples powers of the legislative branch, could provide an impetus for reform. It is indeed time to make structural changes that make the judiciary more accountable to we, the people. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WJUN-AM in Mexico, WQZS-FM in Myersdale, along with WMSS-FM in Middletown, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.